You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all across the World Wide Web. And I feel so comfortable today. It's a very calm studio today.
It is. I know. It's just me and you, just like the old times.
Yes.
Right? But it's funny you said World Wild Web, because that's probably what it is right now. But yes, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, that is also where we house all of our shows. You can go to the archives. Just look up Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so you can look it up by date. Of course, then we share it all on our podcasts and all on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com, and then, of course, all across all of our social media channels as well. And again, after all these years, Sita, you still find fantastic guests, even last minute.
Oh, my goodness.
Way to go, sister.
Yeah. Well, you know, I prep the shows and I plan them ahead of time. But if someone books an hour and then for some reason that person cannot make it, which is normally for illness or something.
Sure.
Then I have to fill that airtime for an hour. And so, you know, last night our guest told me she couldn't come. And she was kind enough to say, you know, she'll reschedule. But, you know, the good Lord works in very mysterious ways. And I had already had a wonderful person lined up to call in for a few minutes. And so it worked out really well. But for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, Ellen O'Neill and myself, we sit here on Mondays and we have this fun, interesting, informative, very valuable show. We talk to people from all walks of life and all background, whether it's about financial literacy or the environment or writing a book or maybe someone who's doing some advocacy. We've got so many people who are involved in civic engagement and doing things for other people, trying to make our world a better place. And so that's the role of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, to leave a good footprint behind for the next generation and our grandchildren. And today's no different.
And it's a great way to celebrate the day after Mother's Day. You know,
it is.
To talk about leaving that legacy and finding new ways to advocate for yourself and for your neighbors and for all the things that matter. You know, which, again, you know, we always talk about the F's, right, from our friends, that, you know, fun, finances, mm-hmm. food, you know, all
whatever
of that
good stuff. It is. We talk about it. But I could do a whole show just on my Mother's Day, but I won't. But,
exactly.
So our guest today is a good friend of mine, which I've hounded this gentleman, which I'm grateful he's still my friend, because I've called him so many times to try to get him back on the show because I'm very concerned about Medicaid expansion. So Scott Darius is the executive director of Florida Voices for Health. Scott graduated from the University of Florida College of Law in May of 2013. He completed his bachelor's degree at the University of Florida with a major in political science in 2010, and he began his career in health advocacy in 2012. He is our first guest, and on our second guest, it's an ABWA sister. Her name is Terry Miller. And Terry is going to be talking about her experience in the metal industry. Yes, we will be talking about copper and steel and brass. And she has worked with CS Metals for 34 years. She also started the Association of Women in the Metal Industries in Baltimore, Maryland. And she'll be calling in the second half of the show. But for now, we've got Scott Darius on the phone, and we are going to welcome him to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you for taking the time to call in, Scott.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for having me back. I love being on with you guys.
You are one of those awesome human beings that when someone talks about political participation through voting or voter registration or just being a good, kind person that looks out for everyone, you come to my mind. And so whenever we have a slot that I could call you and say, hey, do you want to call in? I try to give that airtime to you.
You can't tell, but I'm blushing, so don't worry.
And I was scrolling through Facebook, and I saw this poster that someone had put up about the 2024 summit for Florida Voices for Health. And it was you, your face on it, and it says, there's so many parts of the system that need fixing. We start to find common ground when we're willing to have a nuanced conversation about all the approaches that need to be in place. And that is so true. It speaks volumes about what you are doing to educate all of us about why we need Medicaid expansion. So tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got involved in fighting for healthcare for Floridians.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, Scott Darius, Executive Director at Florida Voices for Health. And the organization itself is, we're 501c3, nonpartisan, nonprofit. And our mission is to increase access to care for low-income and middle-income Floridians. But I think we find that, like, all of us, right, if you have private insurance, the best private insurance, even then you see all the ways the system's not working well for you, right? So
Yes. It's
really every Floridian, I think, is experiencing this in one way or another. And we really focus on empowering people to share their own stories and to get involved in the political process. Part of what kind of guides our work, there's this book I read a few years ago by Dr. Jamila Michener called Fragmented Democracy. And she always, kind of the big points from the book, one is that, you know, people on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale tend to not participate politically. They tend not to be civically engaged. And I think that's relatively known, right? Or we can kind of understand that just on the face of it. But what I think the real value of the book is it gets to the why. In interviews with like hundreds of people around the country, she found that it's folks who, you know, have had the experience of being enrolled in different government programs or whatever it is, their interactions with those systems, the way that they go unheard or unresponded to, as we're seeing now with the Medicaid unwinding, that experience just tends to, discourage people from being involved in one way or another. And so one of the things we're working at is trying to re-engage, right, that these communities to get back into the process. And I think that just starts with listening.
Right.
That just starts with giving people a chance to be heard for the first time.
Right. And it's education, right? It all comes down to education, education, education. So what makes the Florida Voices for Health Summit so unique? I mean, you have it. We're so blessed that it's right here in Rockledge, Florida. There's no reason why we shouldn't attend and educate ourselves and learn new things. But what makes it so unique compared to so many other things going on in the state of Florida?
Yeah, we're really excited about it. It's May 23rd and 24th, so next week, Thursday and Friday, at the Space Coast Health Foundation. And, you know, I think it's a health policy conference overall, right? And maybe folks have been to different policy conferences like that where people just kind of give you a lot of data and facts. This conference is going to be a lot like that, in that we'll focus on kind of what's happening in the Florida healthcare landscape, the way we've broken down the first day. We're going to cover topics like mental health and maternal health, both crisis in Florida right now. Access to oral health is another panel, and we will also do access to care for people with disabilities, and then a legislative session debrief. So, yeah, we're going to get into a lot of like what's happening on a policy level. But like I mentioned, our role as an organization is really empowering storytellers. And part of what we're trying to do is give folks not just that policy view of what's happening, but really trying to fill in some of that nuance by featuring storytellers.
Right.
So we'll have, as part of each panel, you'll have people who have lived through the experience, right? Their only expertise is that they've gone through it themselves, whether it's Medicaid redetermination or trying to get off of the Medicaid wait list for people with disabilities. They'll be there to share their perspective, and hopefully that leaves everyone in the room with kind of a rich sense of, a comprehensive sense of what's happening and how some of these issues are playing out. But then I think a lot of times these conferences just end up being about the problems, right? And that's what we want to avoid. On top of the problems, I think we're really moving people towards solutions. And so there are all sorts of different ways to engage, a lot of different campaigns that we're running and that our partners are running. And so it'll be about giving people concrete action steps that they can take after.
So you're putting a positive spin on it, which is good. By letting people speak their truth, I mean, you've got lawmakers and policy experts, and you have community members who've got real-life experience that are going to be speaking. But tell all listeners, Scott Darius, on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends, when is the deadline to register for the conference? And how can they sign up?
Yeah, so regular registration ends actually on Wednesday, May 15th, and we're down to our last 20 or so spots. So I'd encourage folks, if you're interested, to check out fvhsummit.org. And yeah, you'll be able to check out there pretty quickly. $50 is our highest price ticket, but if you're a community partner, someone who's worked with us in the past, it's $20, $25. If you're a student, it's $20. And yeah, it's a pretty affordable conference.
Yeah, I already paid. I'm working on Thursday, but I will be there on Friday. So I paid my $50 and I'm happy to support you guys.
We're excited to see you.
Oh gosh, well, you inspire me, and I learn something every time I come and I meet great people. So that's wonderful. So now here's the million-dollar question. What is the latest on Medicaid expansion in the Florida state legislature? Because I know a lot of people who've been kicked off the legislative the Medicaid role, and it is affecting families.
Absolutely. The redetermination process we just came through, we're seeing how many families on both sides of it, right? Those who are supposed to still be enrolled, who have been kicked off and are now fighting to get back on it, but also those who, yeah, fall back into Florida's coverage gap, where they don't qualify for Medicaid anymore now that the public health emergency is over, but they really have no meaningful, affordable access to health coverage. Now, where we are in the legislature, the bottom line is it's still a long way to go, right?
Yes.
We know that Senate President Pastodomo, outgoing president, was very adamantly against it, even though it was a healthcare-focused session this time around. But what I will say is that we've seen a bit of a softening, some cracks, right? We had one Republican legislator finally come out and say, hey, Medicaid expansion is something that I support. Representative Dr. Joel Rudman, based up in the Panhandle. And so he's a physician in a rural community, and he sees the need personally, and so spoke out in support of expansion, which was really great to see. One of the things we got to do as Voices this year, we actually brought down a Republican senator from North Carolina who, you know, took the time to go around the Capitol and set up some meetings for him, and I think had really productive conversations about why a Republican would support this, why a conservative would support something like Medicaid expansion and the benefits that it's had for North Carolina already. And I think people were receptive to that. We saw, I think a few weeks later, the incoming Senate President, Ben Albritton, was on TV somewhere in South Florida, I believe, where, you know, I don't think he's a full supporter of expansion or a supporter at all, but signaled that he'd be willing to listen to it. And unfortunately, it's those kind of little victories that we're still looking for, you know?
So including North Carolina, what other states are showing progress with this?
So there's actually been, we know that there's really 10 states left, right, after North Carolina passed theirs. And maybe it's no surprise to us that most of them are in the South. Yeah, for any number of reasons.
Right.
But it's actually in those places that we're starting to see momentum. Georgia's legislature was having the conversation a couple of weeks ago. I think they have kind of a half Medicaid expansion that they did that's not working so well. And so they're finally considering a full expansion. And even in Mississippi, a place like Mississippi, guys, their House and Senate actually put together or put forward a Medicaid expansion proposal, but I don't think they could come to a final agreement during this most recent session, but it's something that they'll return to, and the Speaker of the House is really in support of. So even in the deepest red states, we're seeing people have this conversation, and it's mostly because of what's happening in rural communities.
Well, and it's a shame because in those rural communities are the people that don't have the money to have the advocacy. So I've seen people really need disability and really need that extra help to be able to survive and to be able to get through accidents, like many of the people that you have had on the website, that out of no fault of their own, something happened, and then all of a sudden that redetermination process comes in. It's kind of likened to the same way the IRS treats small business. You know, they go after the people that can least represent themselves and can least get a lawyer to kind of lawyer up and go after to be able to get the rights and the things that they're entitled to. So God bless you, and God bless the organization for doing all that you're doing.
You know, you make a great point, right, that it's usually there's those who get left out. It's like it's usually not for no reason. Like if you look around, if you look at the situation, you can see how it is they became so isolated and continue to be isolated. So for folks in rural communities who have faced like terrible outcomes for a long time, right? And we know that a lot of Florida's leadership comes out of these places. Like they make up such a huge part of the legislature and still like they're lagging behind. For folks who don't know, right, here in Florida, we've had three rural hospitals close since 2020. Those three actually closed in March 2020, which if you think really hard about, you might remember as like a particular time in history,
right?
And yeah. So at this critical moment, you have all of these communities that have lost their local source of care. And it's working with some of our partners, we learned that the hospitals themselves in Suwanee County, Columbia County, and Bradford County were actually the primary care location for 70% of the population. We know that they were actually primarily responsible for delivering most of the babies in the area. And just the quickest of side stories, my wife, who did the really hard work of delivering our first child a year ago, we live up here in Gainesville, and I live 15 minutes from Shands, right? But the day she went into labor, we go to the hospital, and they tell us they can't get us. And it was two full days before we got into the hospital. And while we were there, you know, talking to the nurses, they mentioned it's because they have such a long list of people waiting to be induced.
Yeah, because the other hospitals are closed. Well, you know, that and that's the hypocrisy of politics, right? Is that they encourage people to carry their babies to full term, which we all love babies. We want them to have health care and a place to live and parents with a job with benefits. And if you encourage people to carry their children, then you should have a functioning hospital. You should not withhold federal funds for Medicaid expansion. So can any of us figure out why Florida is one of the states that declines to accept federal money to expand Medicaid? Like, all these people, we talk about our siblings and our cousins and our neighbors and our coworkers, we're human beings collectively. So if you can afford to pay your health insurance premium, whoop-de-doo for you. If you have a job and you have employer-sponsored insurance, good for you. But if you're poor and you fall into that gap where you need all your paycheck, that precious dollars to pay your rent and your car payment and your house insurance and buy food and put tires on the car, why on earth would our state not accept the federal money? Scott, if you could answer that, I would really appreciate it.
Well, and I'd just like to add one thing to that. People that are working two jobs, where do they find the time to advocate for themselves when they're using jobs, right?
So Scott, do we have any idea why our state refuses the federal money?
So it's definitely just politics, right? Because we take federal money up and down the budget. And so to reject this specific pot of money is just politics. And, you know, tied around the ACA being from President Obama and all the things. But there's also this underlying misperception about who Medicaid expansion benefits, right? You hear a lot of times this talking point about, oh, I don't want lazy, able-bodied people who should be doing this and that to, like, get free healthcare. And the thing is, most of the people who fall into the coverage gap are working. They just make more than $7,000 for the year if you're in a family of three, and typically make between about $10,000 and $30,000, depending on their family size. But, yeah, can't afford, you know, they don't qualify for Medicaid at that level, but also can't afford to pay for private coverage because they don't get tax credits in the ACA marketplace. So, it's really driven by, I think, whatever political motivations people have to not support this ACA, this component of the ACA. But it's also based around, it's also driven by a lot of misconceptions that people have about what expansion is and who it ultimately benefits.
Right. And what is the latest and how can we get involved? I mean, I work with people that you see them at the end of the week. They don't have that extra $50, $60 for gas to probably drive to a different state if they want to see a relative. Some people say, well, I need tires for my car and I don't have it. And for people that not everyone has a six-figure income job. There are people that are struggling. We have grandmas and grandpas raising their grandchildren now. I think collectively we have to start looking at each other as the spirit that lives in me, lives in you as well, and do what we can to ensure that people have food, water, shelter, clothing. How can we tell, what do we tell our people who are sitting on the fence and say, you tell us what we can tell them to do right now, how they can get involved?
So first, for the folks who, right, like who need a reason to like care about this, who maybe are like, you know what, I don't need to be all that altruistic, like that's not my thing. And that's totally fine. To the person who wants to be incredibly selfish, right, and selfish feels like a judgment term, but just to say, like, the world is a tough place and it's fair to want to look out for yourself. That's totally fine. I would say even in that scenario, it makes more sense to support something like expansion because let me tell you, we're paying for it one way or another. And right now what we're paying for emergency room visits alone, for preventable emergency room visits for people who are uninsured, the number's astronomical. And so like just on the dental side of things, I think in 2021, we paid as a state $500 million for dental issues that were non-traumatic. So was something totally preventable that they didn't need to end up at an ER for. And that's just for dental care. And so there's a lot, you know, there's a lot we pay in taxes and other burdens kind of in the system that we take on, that we absorb because we haven't taken care of each other in that sense. But, you know, things in the legislature, while they feel really hard at this point, and it feels like there's still a long fight to go there, I'm excited because I think Floridians finally have an opportunity to do something about this for themselves. Florida Decides Healthcare, which is the political committee running the ballot initiative, they've officially launched petition collection as of February of this year. And so for anyone who's looking to get involved, right, and I think you made the point about how hard it is to find time to do advocacy if you're someone living in this situation, and that's how they keep folks down, right? Like, you're spending all your time just trying to like catch up and survive. The ballot initiative, I think, gives you at least one easy step. If you can do nothing else, a petition and get it submitted. But there's also any number of ways to get involved in terms of taking petitions and handing them out to people you know, being part of our hub structure. So yeah, just being a point of access in the community and talking to people about expansion and why it's important, and right, encouraging people to share their stories.
And of course, we live in Brevard, right? And why is this important for people who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today and listening to the executive director of Florida Voices for Health, Scott Darius? Why is it important for people in Brevard, the advocates and the activists, to get involved and get behind you, Florida Voices for Health, and register for the summit coming up?
Yeah, right. There's a lot of local issues, I think, right? Like if you live in Brevard, then you have a sense of where there are those communities of need and what it is people actually want and deserve. And it's just like great to have that perspective as part of this larger conversation of what's happening statewide. You know, I think having folks from the local community gives even more perspective to the conversation that we're having. Yeah, and hopefully you can identify as, right, just all the things that we're talking about, I know also play out in Brevard. And so hopefully you get to walk away with some tips, hopefully some new partners, people you can reach out to and start to build relationships as we all work to tackle these issues together.
Right. Well, yeah, Scott, during when the political season comes around, you hear all the politicians talking about mental health and they want to advocate, and we see the photo ops and all that. But what are some of the major healthcare issues facing our state right now? And I'm pretty sure it's going to be discussed at this conference on May 23rd and 24th.
Yeah, there's the Live Healthy bill that just passed. So we'll talk about all the relatively good things that came from that, but also where it falls short. And we'll look at Medicaid redeterminations and who's been left out and how do we get these folks back into plans. But then we'll also look at things like the maternal health crisis, right? Where I saw a stat where per 100,000 people, I think Florida as a state, it's maybe at 19 deaths per 100,000. But for Hispanic women, that number shoots up to like 25 or something like that. And for Black women, it shoots up to 75 per 100,000 maternal mortality. And so, yeah, there's real problems, real issues happening that go beyond workforce.
Right. And last year, I think you had Chick-fil-A. Are you having that again this year?
That's a surprise.
All right. Because, you know, I love that. Now, you know, I'm so glad that you touched on the dental health part of it because, you know, being a nurse, I see a lot of patients with issues related to dental care that they did not get. You know, it affects your heart, your blood pressure, your eating, deterioration of your gums, infections, abscesses. And I'm so glad you said that because sometimes you meet people and they're like, oh, my God, I was so grateful I was able to get my teeth cleaned, get my x-rays done, and thank God I qualified for Medicaid and I could go and see it. And these folks wait so long. I mean, that's something that has to be addressed as well. We don't have enough healthcare practitioners as well. But I'm glad you touched on the dental part of it because a lot of people don't understand that healthcare includes dental care as well.
Yeah, and that's something that will be touched on in both its own panel, but also I think connects to what we're talking about in disabilities and also maternal health. It's so connected to overall health, and we don't talk about it enough. So hopefully folks will be there, and there are a couple of specific campaigns that we're running where people will actually have the opportunity to hopefully do something about it.
Okay, well, give us the website one more time for someone to sign up for the event happening on May 23rd and 24th, given by the Florida Voices for Health. And you guys are a state health advocacy organization, and it's so wonderful that you're continuing to use your voice for the goodness for so many people in our state.
Yeah, it's FVH, so Florida Voices for Health, FVHSummit.org. And we're just really excited to be back in the Space Coast. It's such an intimate venue, but we always feel like it's just a great place to build relationship. That's ultimately what we're trying to do, is build relationship with so many of the good people we're lucky to work with.
Hey, one of my good friends, Dr. Diane Welch, she bought a ticket to attend both days, but she realized she had a conflict. So she might just donate the tickets. If you have someone that wants to attend, let me know, Scott.
Yeah.
And I could always tell you to slip that person in her spot.
That sounds good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So text me if you have someone that wants to attend and, you know, for some reason they can't afford or whatever, and I'll speak with her.
And your listeners want to.
Yeah, well, that's what another thing. We might have one of our listeners take it if we can. That would be one. Well, I will see you on Friday.
And what
Looking
a great
forward to it.
What okay. a great education today here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Please make sure you check out all this great information that Scott Darius shared with us. We're going to take a brief moment to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
And Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super saving sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere that somebody could log on to the internet.
That's correct. World Wide Web, www.1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you want to wait for the archive, it's also located there on the on-demand button. You can just pick by date under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then, of course, on all of our social media channels, as well as the website SitaMediaInc.com.
Well, you know, when I was in Amsterdam, I was able to log on to you and Allie and listen to the show.
Right? Easy, right?
And the ladies from Eckerd Connect. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So people can tune in. Our second segment on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is going to be quite fascinating. It is a show like no other segment before.
That's right.
We're speaking with our good friend from our ABWA sisterhood, Terry Miller. And Terry, in addition to being a fellow ABWA sister, started her career for 34 years, Miss Ellen, talking about precious metals, copper and steel and brass. And my gosh, all the good things that we see and hear about, but we don't really think about it and pay attention. And so this morning we had a segment that I needed to fill, and I called our good friend Terry. And she said yes, and I started researching what she does for a living. It's fascinating. She's fascinating. She started in the metal industry in 1974 as a salesperson, worked for a copper and brass mill, selling to end users and wholesale distributors. And then she was offered a job in Baltimore, Maryland. And I think she's calling in from there this morning. And we're going to have her say hello to our friends on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. On our dear listeners, welcome to our show, Terry Miller.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Sita. I appreciate you calling.
Well, getting into precious, this is Ellen. Getting into precious metals, it's great to meet you. And I think I've met you at ABWA before in the afternoon sessions. But nonetheless, how did you get into the metal industry? Like, that's something that I don't usually teach in high schools and colleges. It does not.
I had finished with college and moved home to my parents, and the first thing my dad said was, well, are you going to get a job? So I knew that I wanted to do something in business, and I was, you know, I was barely 21, and I went to in the olden days, there were employment agencies that would go out and try to find a job for you. Well, I got lucky, and they said, we have a position available for you at American Copper and Brass. If you're interested, it was exciting because it was $135 a week.
Wow, big shot.
I know. Because I had a part-time job that was minimum wage, and at that time it was like $1.65 an hour. So with that said, I said, sure, I'll go down and interview, and I was hired. And I have to say that was the beginning. And from that, as you know, network is working, you know. I made good contacts and service one of my wholesale distributors in Baltimore, Maryland, and they said, hey, if you ever come to Baltimore from Pennsylvania, why don't you, you know, call us up because we could use you. And I did. I called one day and said, listen, I'm moving to Baltimore. I went in, I interviewed, and I started working at a company called CF Metals. It was a small company, but what happened there is the story, because it was an opportunity like no other. They didn't care what you had in college. They didn't care what you knew or not knew, but they were going to teach you. And from that point on, ladies, I learned everything we needed to know about non-ferrous metals, which is the copper and the brass, but also aluminum. So that's how I started.
And you also started a chapter for the Association of Women in Metal Industries in Baltimore, Maryland as well, because you actually found a tribe. You found some people like yourself.
I did. I found a like tribe, and it was funny. We knew that they were opening up a new chapter, and I encouraged all my female employees to go, and I went too. But I always felt, I don't need this. There's the National Association of Aluminum Distributors, and that's a big boy club. And I said, I want to be where the men, I'm equal. Well, long and short came to it. I went to the ladies' room, and I came back, and I found out I was vice president.
Yeah, that's called being voluntold.
I know.
Well, you know, as I did the research for the show this morning, you made me think about history and historical things, right? Because copper and brass has been around forever. You look at the ancient people, the Aztecs, the the Mayans, you look at the Indian people in India and their utensils that they ate out of and the anklets that they wore and the jewelry, and you're like, wait a minute, this is timeless stuff.
It is. The Bronze Age.
Yes.
Right.
And that's exactly what it is.
Well, and I worked for Home Depot for quite a long time, more than 20 years. And when you said American copper, when you said American copper and brass a minute ago, the first thing that came to my mind was that's where we used to buy our fittings from, all our plumbing fittings.
That's right.
And so
that was. And we used to sell water tube too.
Exactly, and all the HVAC, and so I was all of a sudden I got this connection. It's not just about the metals and the precious metals, because when you'd first said it, I thought. You know, I thought silver and gold, of course.
Yes.
But copper and brass, I'm like, wow, that's in our everyday everything. And
every
it's
day.
Another thing that Sita and I usually talk about is that not everyone, you went to college, but not everyone is destined for college. And this is another perfect example of a women's industry that is not talked about enough, because it could totally be.
It's true. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's a whole nother piece that has been an old. Kind of a boys club, like you said, you know, sort of a boys club our whole life.
Well,
you know?
Well, that's something that we're at a crossroads in our country now, where you're seeing a lot of Gen Zs are saying, I would graduate from high school, but I'm going to be an apprentice. And what she's saying is she became an apprentice.
Exactly.
They taught her everything. And the history of brass and copper dates back to, like, ancient civilizations when artifacts were found in Europe and the Middle East. And if you go to those countries, like, you would see displays of so many things that were there before we came and would be here after we leave, made out of rich copper and brass. Did you find all of that fascinating when you got into this field?
I absolutely did. And it made you aware of the simple things that you take for granted every day in your house or at your job, like brass knobs on a door, or a brass knocker on your front door. And what happened then at CS Metals was they started out making boat nails for the wooden boat industry on the Chesapeake Bay, and they were brass, mostly brass, and they used copper because it was the roofing. So it goes on, and somewhere along the line, World War II, the aluminum, because of the war effort, was in full production. That's a 20th century alloy. So aluminum, which was made because of World War II, the aluminum distribution business started after that war. And all of a sudden, we have aluminum siding, we have aluminum windows, we have aluminum chairs. Remember the old chairs Grandma had
yes.
in the backyard, the little tubular picnic chairs. Aluminum came into our lives, and it was an explosion because it was three times lighter than steel. It didn't rust, and so it was the next best thing. Aerospace starts up in the 60s, and now we're on, like we are, and we are on the space coast. I have a very hard time, even since I've retired, to drive by Lockheed Martin or drive by any aerospace company. As a matter of fact, my boyfriend's grandson works at Blue Origin, and we were there the other week on family day. It's all because of the evolution of the ancients with their brass and copper, and then how steel was forged, and then you throw in aluminum, and now we have aerospace alloys.
Right. I mean, and even now, like when the hurricanes are coming and you have to put up your shutters, you've got that very heavy aluminum. And then there's one that's very, very light. That's very expensive.
That's right. And there lies, we take granted now the aluminum. And now the next thing comes along is titanium. You know, we have titanium pieces in your legs or on your knee, in your hip. You have them on your glasses. You have titanium, you know, not just flying up in the air or on an aircraft. So it was an incredibly lucky thing that I did, was to take that job.
Well, you're certainly educating us, because I read that the earliest brass was made by mixing ground calamine ore with copper and heating the mixture in a crucible. I never heard the word crucible in my whole life. And now I'm learning, right? So,
steel is still made by pouring molten metal into a crucible. That's the name of the vat or the container where the liquid metal is poured.
Right.
So, yeah, they still use the word crucible because of it was an ancient word.
Right, and I think the trick is with when you talk about brass and copper and all that is the resistance, the strength, the hardness, the durability, and we've come such a long way. So when you tell people that this is what you did for a living, what happens when you say that to the gentleman? Because I'm sure it's got to be challenging to be a woman in a man's world in this sort of business.
I had there was a position available at my job for outside sales. So I went to the sales manager and I said, I want to apply for this job. And he said, well, what would you say if you didn't get an order? Would you cry?
I mean,
that is within our lifetime. And
yeah.
Another one was when I asked for another raise, they said, well, how much does your husband make? So we were coming off the ages of Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver, and mommy was home, and all of a sudden we're women in the workforce, but we're career women. We're not there just to wait to get married or to have kids. There were some of us that were career-oriented, and that's where AWMI came in, ladies. AWMI was started because they wanted an organization that would network together and help other women learn and grow within a really good industry. You know,
talking about obstacles you face in a man's world, and sadly, we still see and hear of women who are facing challenges. I'm glad you were one of the ladies that shattered that glass ceiling and got into this industry, and you're so articulate about copper and steel and brass and aluminum and all these things. It's amazing.
Well, and you know, with AWMI, which we used to just call it the Association of, we are at a point, because one of my jobs was in my heart as their international president, was I was hoping that my granddaughter, who just graduated from college on Saturday, would not have to follow in my footsteps as far as finding the good old boy titanium ceiling or whatever ceiling you want to call it.
Yeah.
And we have, as an organization, have gotten to the point we dropped off all the words and we go by AWMI because we allow men in and that men also can vote. At one point, men could be members, but they couldn't vote and they couldn't be on a board. That's how creepy it was as far as the guys. They used to call us the heavy metal women.
Yeah. So what made you stay in the industry? Because, I mean, you face all the obstacles, and it is a learning process, but you decided that you were going to tough it out and you were going to stay in the industry.
Well, I ended up becoming vice president and general manager of a large wholesale distribution network. I was good at what I did, and I liked people. And I had, I had a mind for business, and I was here again. Opportunity knocked, and I listened. I took that opportunity, and I stayed there because I loved it, and I knew what I was doing, and I was making a difference.
Yeah, and now you're involved in the Satellite Beach Women's Club. How does that compare to working with AWMI?
Well, you know, it was interesting because in 1890, our roots in that club trace back to a woman who was a professional journalist who was trying to attend a dinner in an all-male press club, okay, honoring a British novelist, and they wouldn't allow her in because she was a girl. So she said, the heck with that, and so it's what she did. She started a woman's club, and was to pursue, you know, the cause of federation by attending a convention in New York City. And she had 63 clubs in the United States start from there. And it was a service organization where AWMI is a professional organization. Our organization is a service organization. And if you go on our website, you'll find that we stick in Brevard County. There's a local chapter, then there's a Florida district, and then there is a national national organization. And these folks, I see an opportunity to help them structure the organization so there's succession planning, and there is there's other ways to deal with things than what I think I see them doing. So I'm hoping I can teach them how to better the organization, not better what they do or how they do it, but how it's run.
Yeah. And, you know, when you were talking about even Silva, we are seeing that Silva is used to treat wounds.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've got them now, you know, where the wound care companies have, you know, the Silva dressings that comes, you just open the package and put it right on the patient's wounds, and it does heal and it does help. So we've come such a long way from the Roman Empire, from the days when we saw, you know, people wearing these brass ornaments, right? But talk to us a little bit. There's something called ordinary brass, and it's a binary alloy of copper and zinc. Do you know much about that? I mean, I'm sure you do.
Well, brass is so much copper is a percentage of copper and zinc. That's what makes brass. That's like the mothership of yellow metal.
Yes.
And copper is usually 99% pure copper. And with brass, you add in certain, it's why they call it alloys. To make a machinable brass, they throw in some lead. It's like baking. I know that sounds really very feminine, but when you see how the various alloys are designed for specific purposes, it's just done with what they put in the pot, in essence, or the crucible, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, when we were little, I remember my father and mother giving us the brasso with a little piece of cloth to clean all the brass ornaments for the Hindu temple. Because, you know, the Indian people from India, everything is made with brass. You know, the statues, the Buddha, the Lord Krishna. I mean, you're making me fall in love with those little artifacts and things we had, historical things we had at home. I never paid attention to, like, when you burn incense, it was in a brass container, you know? So what is the composition of the brass? It varies, and so does the strength and the color.
That's correct. All that works into, you know, whether or not, you know, whatever your purpose is. Like if you want to machine brass, like I said, you add lead. If you want to form it or do something, or you need it for a certain marine application, you might add something else. So it's not just a quick answer. It's pretty awesome. And you're right about the use of brass through history. Was because it was also goldish, so you could polish it, and it looked, you know, it not only functioned well because it doesn't rust, it changes color, patinas with the elements, and that's where you get like a green roof. If you've ever seen a copper roof that's turned green, or our nation's capital. There's lots of buildings.
The Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, Ellen just said. Yeah, yeah. And but they're saying that if brass doesn't rust, it's non-ferrous. Am I saying the right word? Ferrous, non-ferrous.
Yes.
Right, right. Yeah, but it may tarnish if it's not protected with lacquer. So, I mean.
Well, yeah. If you protect it with lacquer, it doesn't age naturally. So, if you put lacquer on it, it will always remain that way. But if you you really can't polish it. After you lacquer a brass sculpture, and by the way, just real quick, because I know we're running out of time, I was lucky enough, my late husband I met He called me one time for some brass. He was a metal sculptor and a professor at a university, and we met because he needed some material. And was he cute? He got a cute discount, by the way. But years later, I got to be in his studio with him, and I got to actually touch and work it, because all I ever did was sell it and buy it. You know, I
yes.
bought it to the warehouse and sold it. Well, but his piece ended up in the Smithsonian. So I know the how I have a real strong affinity to the silicon bronze and to the brass that he used to use to make sculpture.
Yeah. Well, you would like our house. Whenever you come back to Satellite Beach, when you come home, you would have to see all the antiques that my husband picks up at various garage sales and brings them home. So they're amazing. They're pieces like the Lady of Justice. We've got one made out of brass, and he's in the process of trying to clean. So you this morning when I spoke to you, I walked around the house and I'm like, oh my God, I have so much brass ornaments, things from Iran, things from India, things from Trinidad that need to be shined. So what's the best way to protect? Because some of them have that greenish coating on them now.
Yeah, that's the patina that it actually turns to. You know, you have to, there's Brasso. Remember the Brasso that you had to do at your mother's?
Yes.
That's the best thing to use to clean them.
Yeah. And our, you know, we have two more minutes left, but I just wanted to share with our listeners that we see things around us. We look at the environment and we wonder about the Indian River Lagoon, and we look at the electrical grid and we wonder about, you know, the power grid. But as we drive around, and like you said, we look at doorknobs and you look at your car and the copper. Ellen was saying that people were stealing copper at one point. I think, yes, people don't understand that copper has the second highest electrical conductivity and thermal conductivity after silver, and it's widely used in the production of conductive and heat conductive materials. And I'm sure when you were buying and selling and doing this business, you probably fell in love with all these terms, and you were fascinated by all these things that you were reading about as well.
Oh, absolutely. And the joy of it all, too, was I got to go to clients that were making these things. So, you know, you know how we have a circuit breaker in our house?
Yes.
Think of a container, on like a 20-foot ship container that had copper all the way around it. It was a gigantic fuse box for, like, hospitals. And I got to see how some of this was used. I mean, it really made not only made more sense after I saw their application, but it's still, I am in awe of how the human beings of this world were able to come and figure out stuff from the earth could actually make life better.
The elements, right? All the elements,
yep.
The special brass, the copper, the alloys, the all composed in lead and tin and nickel and lead and iron. And my God, you're educating us on so much stuff.
Yes.
But give us your, how can someone contact you if they wanted to share, for you to speak with a group or young people who are interested in speaking about these things, or even get involved in the women's club? How do we contact you or become part of your world, Terry Miller's world?
Yes, and you have my contact information. The one joy about being retired is that's all you really need. The website for the women for the Satellite Beach Women's Club is gfgoodfrankwcsatellitebeachwomensclub.org.
Well, I tell you, Terry Miller, you're teaching us that the Romans used brass for decorative purposes, such as engraving plates and tombs, but we could actually use brass now in our everyday life to pay attention and think about where it came from.
That's right.
Well, look at stainless steel. It doesn't. It is used in hospitals and restaurants because they don't. It's It prevents germs.
We're gonna have to. Unfortunately, we're gonna have to sign off because we only have a couple of seconds left to do our sign off. Terry, thank you so much for being with us today. It seems like Sita, we need to do a whole other show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
It's amazing she's right about the germs. We'll have to do a show just about stainless steel and germs.
That's exactly right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on 1510 WWBC. Please tune in.